All right, welcome to the Comedy Film Nerds podcast. Graham, did you know this is episode 440?
Oh my God, Chris, that is amazing.
This is the first episode after the All Things Comedy Festival.
Wow.
In Phoenix, Arizona.
Holy cripe. We're a quarter of the way to 1760.
Yeah, already.
Already.
It's only been 20 years.
I know, it's nuts. What are we going to do for the 1760 episode? It's going to be great.
We're going to get in our rocket cars and fly to the moon.
Or are we going to be fighting over drinking water?
Yes. Doesn't have to be either or.
Yeah, we could have both. Who's to say we can't have a water war and fly to the moon?
Sure.
And Mars? I'm in.
You know, drill, baby, drill. Maybe there's water on the moon. So we just got back a couple of days ago from the All Things Comedy Festival. We want to thank all the fans that came out to the live podcast. There wasn't a lot of you, but we know it was the super fans. Here's how we knew. Because you brought your own merchandise for us to sign. So if we had known that, we would have brought less to sell.
I know.
So, because you guys brought all your own.
Which I love. Yeah. I love that you guys do that. You know, however you get the merch is cool. Mm-hmm. And I know some people...
So we gave out free t-shirts.
We gave out free t-shirts. Mm-hmm. So if you came to the show, you got a free t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you to everyone who showed up. That was really cool. And I love the ATC Fest. They, you know, in the second year, they really... I know last year the pop-up studio was sort of a last-minute thing. Like they just sort of found this...
It popped up.
Space, and they literally popped it up. And this year they made it more of like an integrated part of the festival. Aaron?
Yes, sir.
So you were working primarily at the pop-up studio the whole time?
Entirely.
Part of your job was to weigh down the giant ATC letters, correct?
Yeah, they did topple at one point. Right before you guys, actually.
Scar Brothers.
So a lot of the weight, people carrying weights. I'm like, this can't happen again.
This can't be good. What did you notice? What was the thing that stood out to you just in terms of...
The giant letter marshal's going to visit.
The Phoenix letter police showing up? Like, what was different for you, or what did you notice?
Noticed a spike in attendance. I don't think there were... There were maybe two shows where... And that's including the first one on Thursday that had, you know, nobody there. It was mostly, there was a good little crowd for everybody there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
It was fun again. You know, I did a set then on Friday at the Tempe Improv, which was just
a great room.
Oh, it's a great room. You know, we did it last year. Ron Placone and I did it in May with the Progressive Comedy Tour. So it was really fun. And, you know, great turnout at that show and, you know, just hanging out at Stand Up Live and seeing all the comics and, you know, like, we had the Sklar Brothers on the show. If you guys haven't listened to the episode, it's a blast having the Sklar Brothers on the show.
Really funny.
And then I watched them do like a 50-minute set. They're kind of working on a new hour, you know, for another special. And I was like, I hadn't seen them do a long set in forever. You know, we don't get to see each other do headline sets because we all go do headline sets on the road. So it was great to see their longer set and their new material was really cool. And, you know, I saw Eddie Pepitone and Brody and, you know, it was a lot of fun. It was a fun festival.
Yeah. And it's really great. It's in a great area too. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they put us up right by the pop-up studio and the comedy club and there's food and bars and everything you kind of need in that little downtown area.
Aaron, where do you see... Like, where do you see the festival going in terms of growth, expansion in years to come? What do you...
From what I hear, we are looking into... We're obviously still staying in Phoenix. We'll probably be in the same spot next year. But then possibly expanding to another location as well.
Oh, having like multiple ATC fests? Oh, that'd be really cool, man.
Yeah, like an East Coast.
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be great.
Yeah, it's really... And I think the... You know, the fans showing up, they really, like any new festival, we're like, oh, we heard about this last year, but so we wanted to make it this time. We had some people say that to us.
There were definitely people who I recognized from last year, which is great.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. And I think, you know, a lot, especially, I think it's good to bring, you know, we always talked about this with PodFest of bringing it into some markets that were, you know, smaller than LA because, you know, we're sort of spoiled in Los Angeles that on any given night of the week, you can go see all these huge name acts.
Right, right.
At any of the clubs around town. Yeah. The theaters.
And even places that aren't clubs.
Yeah, even just like a bookstore. Like, yeah. Oh, wow, there's this massive name act, you know. Whereas when you bring all that talent, that name talent to another city, like, you know, Phoenix has 3 full-time clubs, I think. Stand Up Live, the Tempe Improv, and then there's one I think called Comedy Comedy. So, and on any given weekend, there's maybe 3 name acts, you know, in your town versus during the festival, there was 2 dozen, you know.
Right.
Like, so that's a really cool thing. I hope the festival grows. It's really fun. It's as we've said, you know, it's great just being as a festival as a performer and not having to produce it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot easier.
It is a lot easier.
And we make more.
Yeah. Yep.
So, well, Graham, we even, with going to a festival, doing a live podcast, we still found time to see some movies.
Yeah.
Because actually, you guys deserve it.
You guys, well, the festival, one of the reasons I was able to see a film was so we drove in Thursday and you drove back Friday, so I stayed Friday. And then Saturday, the cheapest flight was late in the day. Like I left around 6 o'clock or something like that. So I had all this time to kill Saturday. So I walked to my local downtown Phoenix Cineplex and saw a movie for like $5. I was like, God, this is awesome.
Don't get used to that.
No. I always try to see movies on the road because they're cheaper.
Yes.
And I saw The Hate U Give, and you know, this is
a feel-good movie.
Well, it's obviously pretty heavy in a lot of ways, but it does have, it does try to have, you know, a positive message. And I don't want to give stuff away. I want to bring up the IMDb on it because...
the trivia was interesting on it when I pulled this up.
Yeah, what'd you find?
The film makes many references to the beliefs and work of Tupac Shakur. And on the night of Tupac's murder, he was riding a black 1996 BMW 7 sedan with chrome custom rims driven by Suge Knight. In the film, King, the film's antagonist, drives a late model black BMW 7 series sedan with chrome custom rims. So there's definitely some emulation of that event.
You know, there was... So George Tillman Jr. directed it. It's based on a book by Audrey Wells, and Angie Thomas did the...
did the novel.
Audrey Wells did the screenplay. She did the adapted, and Angie Thomas did the... I'll say this. I think Audrey Wells should get an adapted screenplay nomination.
Oh, is that good?
Yeah, they did. I'm not familiar with the book. I have not read it, but they... It was really powerful. And I just want to read the director's credits, too, before I get in. So he's done, it looks like, you know, he did Notorious. He did Men of Honor. He directed Soul Food. He's done a lot of TV. He's directed an episode of Luke Cage, which is rad. and, you know, nothing huge, but this movie, the thing I liked about this film was it was very three-dimensional in all of the characters and the stuff that it tried to tell.
Oh, that's great.
So this is in the trailer. This isn't giving anything away for those of you who haven't seen it. So she is a girl who lives in a predominantly black neighborhood, but her parents send her to a predominantly white private school. So, and that's the beginning of the movie, is she's like, you know, if you want to go to the high school in my neighborhood, that's where you go to score junk, get pregnant, join a gang.
Right.
So her parents drive her to the other side of town. The guy who plays her dad, Russell Hornsby plays her dad. And he is a really good actor. And we've seen him let me bring up some stuff that he's played.
I see Anthony Mackie's in the movie too.
Anthony Mackie plays King. Common plays her uncle. Russell Hornsby has, you know, he's in Fences. You know, he's been a bit actor for a character actor for a lot of stuff, but he, you know, he's done a lot of TV, but like he had a big role in Fences, and you know, he's literally his IMDb resume is almost all TV.
There's some video games on there too.
But he is, I mean, he plays the dad, right? So he plays her dad, this, Amanda Steinberg plays the lead, Star Carter, right?
Mm-hmm.
The opening scene is him having the talk to her and her brother about if you get pulled over by a cop, you put your hands on the dashboard,
right?
You know, and it's
no
like
sudden movements.
No, mm-hmm. And it's like she goes, "That's when I got the talk." You know, mm-hmm. Like black parents have to have this talk with their kids,
right?
And the reason I really like this film is this type of story. And watching the trailer, I was like, I hope they don't fall into two-dimensional character land,
right.
of like
stereotypes.
The gangbanger,
right.
The cop, the white cop,
right.
The white boyfriend,
yeah.
The black friend,
the racist cop.
Yeah. I was like, I really hope they don't fall into that. And they did a really good job of showing the full scope of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad used to roll with the gang. He did prison time and was like, I'm out and I'm providing for my, you know, I'm gonna be straight and narrow. And so he knows that life, but he's not going back into it. The, you know, her boyfriend is a white dude. And that easily could have been just...
Well, that's all she had to choose from the all-white school.
Yeah. But, like, that easily could have been the stereotypical white guy. But there's a, you know, and but they handle it the right way. There's a scene where he's like, look, I don't understand,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I'm your boyfriend. I want to be there for you. And she, you know, just brought some stuff up from like my high school years of like.
And watching The White Shadow.
Watching The White Shadow for sure. Of her, like, you know, she doesn't want to bring her boyfriend around her neighborhood.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you see how she doesn't fit in either world. She goes to a party in her neighborhood and she's like, I don't fit in this world. And I don't fit in the white private school either. You know, I'm sort of have these two personalities and they're very much at odds with each other. Because, you know, at the party in her neighborhood, you know, a gang fight breaks out and, you know, the cops show up and,
right.
And, you know, and then the white school, they're all trying to act black and be cool. And, mm-hmm. you know, she's like, and even like the relationship with Common doesn't have a huge role in this, mm-hmm. but he plays her uncle who's also a cop.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a scene where they talk about.
And who was probably one of the more expensive actors on the set.
Yeah, yes, that's why he had his.
Yeah.
They could afford a week of
right.
Common, but they couldn't afford
yeah.
5 weeks of Common. But no, there's a really great scene where she's talking to, because what happens, and this is in the trailer, of childhood friend of ours is he's giving her a ride home at a party. He gets pulled over by the cops. The cop's a white cop, shoots him. He's brushing his hair. He doesn't have a gun.
Right.
So it really, it talks about the complexities of all these issues. You know, people mm-hmm. in the media want to portray the kid, her friend that got shot. Well, he was a drug dealer. And she's mm-hmm. like, well, wait a minute. There was no jobs. Her mom got sick. His mom got sick. He had, you know, like, and Common's conversation that he has with her about being a cop and what a routine traffic stop is like, wow.
Right.
They really showed all sides of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to give away the ending, but, you know, how they, because I was also, as we were ramping up to the ending, I go, how are they going to leave it just nothing changes, everything's shitty, mm-hmm. or... Yay, we fixed it all. Like
right.
Disney ending, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
and they didn't do either. They really mm-hmm. did a good job. It was very well, the dialogue and the characters are very three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. It was really the mom, the dad. It wasn't these clear-cut things in some of the instances. It mm-hmm. was very compelling. And it was, you know, I remember when I moved to Evanston, Illinois, and we were living on the south side of Evanston, and we were in a condo, right? It was nice. It wasn't crappy, but there was stuff, you know, there was a burnt down gas station by us. And
mm-hmm.
and I remember when girls who lived in the north side of Evanston, where the bigger the mansions were, would give me a ride home, I would not have them drop me off right in front of my place.
Oh, right.
I would have them drop me off like a block or two away. Oh, it's mm-hmm. too hard. It's because I didn't want to see this like alley and a burnt down gas station and all this mm-hmm. stuff. And so I kind of identified with some of that in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember I went to like a winter formal with a girl that was black and took some shit for it
mm.
from like some of the black guys and stuff like that. And I saw, you know, she's at this party and was like, oh, you acting all white now, or you're, you know, like all the sort of the racial identity politics or whatever you want to call it that she had to kind of navigate.
Culture
and the either culture with skewed views of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in, but she's in both of them. So she actually kind of knows.
Right.
It was really, it's really well told story. It's obviously very timely. Mm-hmm. And I think it should get some nominations, quite honestly.
Performances too, or was
yeah, Amanda Steinberg for sure. The girl that plays Star, she's the lead. She carries the heavy load of the acting throughout most of it. She does a good job. Mm-hmm. I think Regina Hall and Russell Hornsby, who play her parents, should get maybe nominations. Common, God, he should, but his role, I don't know if it's big enough.
It's too small.
But adapted screenplay for sure.
Right.
And maybe even a nomination for Best Picture for the director, who did a really good... I mean, you know, this could have fallen into so many two-dimensional cliches. Right. But the director, George Tillman Jr.
I mean, it was a it's a best-selling book. So, you know, it was one of those things where, well, there's going to be a huge audience for this already. Now, I don't know, like, how is it doing, like, box office-wise?
You know, that's a great... Let me see her.
Because here's another one of those movies that... it's got a strong foundation because the book's so popular, but not seeing a lot of marketing spent on this movie. It's one of those.
Well, it said it's done, as of October 28th, it's done $18 million gross in the U.S. My guess is the budget was probably 10.
Yeah, it's probably in that range,
so,
for sure.
It's making money. That's
and it's still in its theatrical run, so...
This is one of those movies, we talk about this every year, of like, I really hope they have the money to make an Oscar push.
Well, you know, what's interesting is it could be something like Moonlight, where the money was spent for a push for Golden Globes, and then that propelled it into the Oscars.
Right.
So something like that could happen too.
I hope so, because it's a contemporary story. When I first saw the trailer, I thought it took place in the 90s with all the Tupac. Yeah. She's just a young girl that likes 90s culture.
Right.
Mm. Excuse me. But yeah, and they talk, they quote Tupac.
It seemed, you know, to be, it was a big influence.
And how, you know, the lyrics of Tupac of like, we can't have any more excuses. We have to pick ourselves up and protect our community. And, you know, it's a really solid movie. And I, you know, there's a scene where Russell Hornsby, your dad, is like, I named all of you kids because this was my intention for you.
Mm-hmm.
And your name is Star. Mm-hmm. I want you to shine. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of it is her sort of wrestling. Do I talk about this publicly? What happened? Do I not? And there's threats from all different sides if she talks about this. And how she navigates that as a 15, 16-year-old girl.
Right.
And how that's handled. So it was really, I liked it a lot. It's worth watching.
Great. All right. Well, I saw The Old Man and the Gun. In theory, this is Robert Redford's final role before retiring from acting. We'll see if it's a Stephen King retirement or if it's an actual retirement. We don't know.
Wasn't The Castle back in like 2007 supposed to be his last movie or something?
So I'm, you know, and here's the thing too, as I'm watching Robert Redford in this movie, he's having so much fun in this movie. I'm like, is this really going to be his last one, or it'll be, you know, the kind of thing where maybe he'll take some time off and go, you know what, maybe I'll do one more.
Yeah, he's not good.
So this was a really interesting, fun film because it was old school Hollywood in every sense of the expression, because you have an actor with a huge resume and pedigree, you know, a giant star, Robert Redford, but you also have a type of story that was common in Hollywood's heyday, the gentleman thief. You know, he's a bank robber, but he was a gentleman, never hurt anybody, and he was like almost like a you know, this legendary figure. Like, he escaped from prison like 16 times, something like that. And it's also based on a true story. It's based on a real guy, which is interesting. But Robert Redford portrays this guy in such a likable manner. It's like, yeah, he's a bank robber, but come on, he's so charming. Yeah, and even when the police are like interviewing the bank after he gets robbed, like the manager's like, you know, he was a gentleman. like they really play that up, which is such an old school Hollywood thing. Like where you know, you have this, there was that kind of like glorification of, you know, the gentleman robber and, mm-hmm. you know, the guy that, you know, honor among thieves, all those things. And this is way before Heat, you know, like movies like that. So it was really an interesting thing. It was good to see Sissy Spacek on the screen as well. You know, they had a great relationship. What I love, too, is like there's these two actors that have been 1,000 movies. And they're just having fun playing like a meet cute, you know, as they're hanging out in right. in a coffee shop, getting to know each other. You know, he's hitting on her and he's like, oh, I don't want to tell you what I really do because you'll leave. You walk out that door. And it's like, and he's like a bank robber. He's like, well, what would be worse, if I was lying or if I was telling the truth? like lines like that. They're just really like, you know, the charm of the scenes just came out. And it made me think, too. If these stars weren't anchoring and driving this film, A, it never would have gotten made. B, and it also wouldn't have been nearly as interesting. Like, this is also the epitome of a star-driven movie.
Right.
Like, if this didn't have Robert Redford in it, nobody cares.
Right.
You know, and what also was really smart casting is the cop that's trying to catch him is Casey Affleck. So it's almost like, in a way, you're passing the baton to the next generation right. of actor. And seeing them interact was really cool. And then he had like kind of like a begrudging respect for him. Yeah, he's a cop. He's trying to catch a bank robber. But there's just that mystique and that legendary feel for this guy that like, oh, my God, he's been doing this for 60 years or whatever, robbing banks, escaping prisons and all these things. They have like it's almost like a reverence that they have for someone like this. And it was really interesting. There was one thing that took me out of it is they went through all the different ways he was escaping from prison. You know, it was the typical, the laundry and going under the car and, mm-hmm. you know, climbing over the wall or digging a tunnel, all that stuff. There was one where they showed this one time he built a boat. I'm like, he built a boat? Really? In prison, he built a boat and sailed away from the prison. And even if there's a kernel of truth in that from the real story, it didn't work cinematically because it almost like, well, now he's like MacGyver or a superhero, because then they showed the boat. It had like a sail and all this thing. Like, how could he have built that in prison? And no one noticed. And then he just sailed away on it. So it was a little weird choice there. But what I love too is like at first I thought, oh, did they like do the Benny Button thing and like make him look younger for some of these escapes? No, they actually took a clip from The Chase.
Oh, nice.
So I was like, okay, yeah, because that looks like an older. When I looked at it again, I'm like, this looks like an older movie. So that was part of
the. Did they take stuff from Brubaker and every other like prison movie he's done?
Honestly, they could have, but they didn't. That was the only one they pulled from. Everything else was kind of in shadow where they just kind of showed him. Getting out when he was older.
When I saw the trailer for this, I was sort of reminded of The Gray Fox, that movie that Richard Farnsworth did in the 80s,
right,
where he played a stagecoach robber that went to prison for 30 years. And when he came out, it was after the Industrial Revolution.
Right.
And he didn't, it was that age-old story of like, he can't get a regular job.
Right.
So he starts robbing trains.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's this gentleman robber and, mm-hmm. and he's sort of glorified and it's this very beautifully shot movie.
It's exactly what this felt like.
Yeah, this would have felt like mm-hmm. who Richard Farnsworth obviously was in The Natural with him. Mm-hmm. He played one of the assistant coaches on the New York Knights. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting.
Wasn't that movie where he drove the tractor too?
Well, that was the one, yeah, where he drove it. That was one of his last films before I think he took his own life because he was suffering from really painful form of cancer.
Mm.
but yeah, it looks interesting to me.
Yeah, and one of the things I also liked about it too is that like it didn't pretend to be anything else. It wasn't pretending to be like this hard hitting biopic of like this robber. It was just a fun, popcorny, star-driven, old-school Hollywood movie, and it knew what it was. And
right.
Like, this is what we're presenting to you. There's not going to be any surprises as far as tone or twist endings or switches, like a horrible murder towards the end that's kind of like, oh, my God, where did that... So it was... It stayed in the tone that it should have stayed in, which was a Old School Hollywood, Gentleman Robber, light, fun, and even like Robert Redford said, like, I did it because it was, you know, it was be a fun last movie to do. And so it totally made sense. And then there's a couple, they put a couple Easter eggs too of Robert Redford's earlier films, including like the opening typeface. It was nearly identical to what opened Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh, right.
And there was one scene between Robert Redford and Casey Affleck where Affleck runs a finger over the side of his nose.
Like the Sting.
Yeah, like the Sting, exactly, with the comment they were fellow travelers to let the other con man know. So it was really interesting. And I'll tell you what was also interesting is it made me think about Clint Eastwood's movie coming up, like how Clint Eastwood is still, he's the aging criminal and
yeah,
the mule.
Playing the mule.
And the difference is Eastwood's like, you know, it's going to be dark and gritty, all like the movies I wanted, whereas this one was just more Butch Cassidy fun. So it's like, I think like both these movies will be interesting swan songs to great careers. Like, but again, if they're the last movies.
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, Robert Redford is, you know, he's had so, I mean, you know,
it's been quite a career for him.
Quite a career. I mean, then he comes back in the Avenger movies and like,
yeah.
plays, says Hail Hydra.
Yeah.
I mean, he was somebody that, you know, when I was a kid.
And he founded Sundance.
Yeah, he founded Sundance. When I was a kid, he was like, wow, because Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and the Sting were like amazing. But then again, Electric Horseman is a great movie. The Natural is one of my favorite films of all time. And you know, he had that string of sort of the gritty working class guy, 3 Days of the Condor, All the President's Men. I mean, come on, these were iconic films, and some of them were like very, you know, socially relevant. That he would always play these guys. The Candidate, that's another great film that just shows like how fake politics is. You know, he does all this stuff to get, and when he wins, he's like, now what? You know? So it's great to, I don't know, this is something, even though Casey Affleck's a creep, I would, it makes me want to see this.
It's definitely worth seeing for sure. I really feel this is like a perfect airplane movie. Now, will it win any Oscars? No, it won't. But it wasn't the thing that I loved about it. It wasn't designed to. It wasn't meant to. This is the kind of movie that you're just going to enjoy on the level it's intended.
Yeah, so. It's not one of those movies that has a like, here comes the Oscar scene.
Right,
you know,
exactly. Yeah. So it avoided those, and everyone's having such. And this is what really comes through. Everyone's having such a good time. Casey Affleck's having a good time. Robert Redford's having a good time. Sissy Spacek's having a good time. Even there's little cameos with Danny Glover and I think it's Tom Waits. I believe is in it too. It's like part of his Over the Hill gang.
Right.
And you literally see them for a couple of shots. That's it. I'm like, I think that's Danny Glover. He's only in like 3 shots. Yeah. And Tom Waits, and like, I'm waiting for the Tom Waits song. There's gotta be one on the soundtrack somewhere. So it's definitely worth seeing for sure.
Aaron, have you seen anything?
I did. When I was in Phoenix, our hotel rooms had HBO Go, so I caught My Dinner with Hervé.
How was that?
Oh. Peter Dinklage as Hervé Villechaize.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is that like?
It's a little all over the place. It's okay. It's not bad. He does the voice of Hervé, which is really disturbing coming out of Peter Dinklage, who you know so well and has such a great voice. They do some great like de-aging of him at one point, like to play the young Hervé, because obviously I think Dinklage is in his 40s.
Did they recreate any footage from that movie, The Forbidden Zone?
Yes.
Wow. Yes, really?
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. And they did obviously Fantasy Island stuff. Mm-hmm. They had Andy Garcia playing Ricardo Montalban. Which,
okay, now I want to see this movie. This sounds like a train wreck.
He could have done a better impression if you're asking me, but I mean, it's a good choice, I think.
Andy Garcia can barely do an Andy Garcia impression right now.
Yeah, they could have gone with a different guy. It wouldn't have hurt. Jamie Dornan is the other co-star, like the main star of the movie. They're basically, Peter Dinklage wanted to do this movie forever. He met the director, and the director had had this experience. He literally had this crazy night with interviewing Hervé Villechaize, and then he died shortly thereafter.
Because he took his own life.
Yeah. Yeah, which I forgot until the end of the movie. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's historical. So Jamie Dornan kind of plays his... it can't even be remotely the same as his own life, because he's playing like an Irish reporter who's an alcoholic who's barely sober. And, you know. Do I think Jamie Dornan can act? I don't know. I don't know where I'm at with that guy. he was great on The Fall as the serial killer. Such a creep. I don't know if I can see him as anything else at this point. Because they kind of just yell at each other for a lot of it. He's like, damn it, Hervé. And Hervé's like, what? We gonna have fun. You know,
so like, it's like a wrestling match.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just really crazy to see Peter Dinklage do this voice for an hour and a half. Like it's just insane, because it's so much higher and
weird.
It almost makes you think they did it in post, like they adjusted his voice.
They
in post,
might have. But
does it take you out of it?
No, I think you get used to
or
it.
Or does the whole movie take you out of it?
No, I don't think so. It's okay. It's worth a watch just to see him do this voice and to relearn about his life, because it is pretty crazy. I think it's. Yeah, I think it might even be a little nuttier in reality, but
they toned it down for HBO.
yeah, I think
so. You're in a hotel room with nothing to do. You're saying this is a movie to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, it's worth a watch. What the hell?
All right,
get your nostalgia fix and
it would be the guy had it. It was an interesting cat who had an interesting life, you know.
And Dinklage is just so watchable. Like he's just he's it's you can watch him do anything.
All right.
Yeah.
My Dinner with Hervé.
Is there any insights to did he not want to do Fantasy Island? Was he excited to get the role or?
Oh yeah, he was super excited because he'd done the Bond film, The Man with the Golden Gun.
Right.
And then was living out of his car when he got the call for Fantasy Island. And Aaron Spelling wanted him. There was no audition process, you know. It was just, boom, I need that guy. So, yeah, it changed his life. But then, obviously, he kind of threw it all away. Drinking and womanizing and stuff.
Right.
Was he doing drugs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then
And he gets married, and it's like the girl just wants fame. She's kind of like, literally, as they're kissing during their wedding, like, she's looking at a camera. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's weird that didn't work out.
Yeah.
It's weird that adding drinking and drugs made his life.
Yeah.
Such a positive effect.
It helps with judgment.
He's constantly pulling a knife on Jamie Dornan, but it's like the smallest knife. It's like appropriately small. It's funny.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's worth a watch. What the hell?
Mm. All right.
It's more like a pushpin kind of thing.
Not quite that
small. A pushpin. Like a carrot peeler or something.
So, Graham, we've got some Patreon sponsors
today. Oh, we do, buddy. Mm. Thank you so much, Patreon supporters.
We don't have a guest, but we've got Patreon sponsors.
This is my fault. I got asked to do Aggressive Progressive on the Young Turk, so I had to move the time, and our guest couldn't move the time.
But we didn't cancel him. We moved
him to a different date.
Yeah, so he'll be back in 2 weeks.
It's Henry Phillips, but we couldn't. So I couldn't find a guest to fill in such short notice, because they emailed me last night. So...
Well, I asked Aaron, he's like, oh, everybody's recovering from the festival right now.
Right.
Johnny Rulon.
He's
promoting his novel, Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's available on Amazon in both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com. That's happyhorrorshowproductions.com.
These folks have told us that their numbers have spiked by advertising with us, guys. So if you have a cool product and you don't have a massive marketing budget, go to the patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds.
Yeah, and we'll hook you up. The Audacity Performing Arts Project produces after-school performing arts projects in poor, underfunded, and low-performing schools. Performing arts education is not a luxury. Please visit them at audacityperformingarts.com. That's audacityperformingarts.com. Check them out.
Support the arts,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, it's important. It's a good organization.
They're cutting,
for
they're
sure.
getting rid of arts programs in so many schools, and it's ridiculous.
That's, when
so.
We did tours just of grade schools, that's the first thing they said. They said, like, all these programs are gone. You know, the PTA and the parents have to pay for them, or they'll disappear.
They don't have them.
Yeah, yeah, they're gone. Like, literally, the salaries of the art and music and these teachers, even the computer lab, are all have to be paid for.
What kind of society are we living in where we're not, we don't have the money to teach kids arts and music?
Yeah, it's awful. Yeah, and yeah,
we got money for war, right? We got money for war.
And you would think, well, computer science, maybe we'll find money for that. No. You know, our grade school, we still have to raise money for the computer teacher too.
What are we training kids to do? Just to be Lyft drivers?
Yeah. work at a call center. From Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide is a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Friday wherever podcasts are found. Find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com. That's coffeeoversuicide.com. And Graham and I will be guests on upcoming episodes.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
That's the other thing too. You know, if you're promoting a podcast on the ad tier, we'll be guests as long as it's Skype. We're not going to go to your weird house.
Yeah.
So it has to be Skype, but we'll do it.
Yeah, you know, if you live in some weird cave or something like that.
Yeah, then we don't even have to know.
Yeah, I don't
know. You know, as long as you have
an internet connection.
Yeah, you live wherever you want. You can live with Hervé Villechaize in his car.
Sure. You can pull out weird knives.
Yeah. Or, excuse me, Villechaize.
Villechaize. Mm-hmm. All right.
Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast and host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. They were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in April 2018 with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. Now, I'd mentioned this before, you know, like the Sklars, you said, they're working on their new hour. They did like a 50-minute set. To do a three-hour stand-up show is quite an accomplishment. It's pretty amazing to be able to do that. Like, what people don't realize is that it takes a lot of material to fill 1 hour. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, literally, if you wrote it all out, it'd be like a book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, it's a lot. So Google Alice Frazier Trilogy for more info. And Rebecca Evans of the Art Podcast.
Hey.
When we move past hesitation and we're true to ourselves, we find our own art in life. You want to hear some fun stories and get inspired? Check out the art. So go to facebook.com/theartpodcasts with an S.
I've been on it. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's a good podcast. Yeah. And all right, trailers.
Oh,
now,
snap.
This was a really interesting one. When I found out about this project, I'm like, I got to see this trailer. What is going on here? The Nutcracker and the Four Realms.
What?
Not just the Nutcracker. There's four realms involved.
Okay. All right, let's watch.
And then when I saw Disney's name over it, I'm like, really? What is going on here?
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, this is just a teaser. Sorry, everybody. Hold on.
Oh, that's all right.
Way to go.
I think we can see enough in 30 seconds.
Let me go back.
Or you could do the final trailer. That's the next one.
Let's
there.
Do that. Final yeah. trailer. That mm-hmm. That's a dead giveaway.
Yeah.
You're on mute.
Your gift this year would be something
just
you'll
blast
never
there
Most people don't realize
that is Morgan Freeman collecting a paycheck in this movie.
Within our world.
That's where he's like, you know, he goes through and that phase that Tom Hanks went through, just never turns down the script.
You don't have to.
You have to do this.
Yeah, you could.
Your
career is fine, right? Mm-hmm.
Remember, Clara. Nothing is as it seems.
A lot of visual effects artists got
You're
work in this.
Realms,
that's good.
Princess Clara.
A couple of practical effects people. Not as many, but
Majesty.
A lot of costume designers.
Welcome to our world.
You know my favorite part of this trailer is? It's called The Nutcracker in the Four Realms. Have you seen The Nutcracker yet?
No.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out which realm I'm in.
This is where our
troubles began. Mother Ginger started this war.
Don't you know it's dangerous
here? Nutcracker War?
Yeah.
I hope you'll be the one to finish it.
I hope they call it the Nutcracker War.
It's just the laws of physics.
Do those laws always work?
As far as I know.
Ready.
Go!
Really feels like, well, you remember how crappy Alice in Wonderland the live action movies were?
Remember?
Yeah, we're gonna make something even worse without Tim Burton.
I've been expecting you.
You won't be expecting me.
It's time.
So I think there's some mechanical toy soldiers again. Didn't see the Nutcracker in the entire movie, the entire trailer.
I didn't. I cannot.
Maybe he was there. It's after he turns in from the Nutcracker into a soldier. Maybe that was one of the people in the trailer. I don't know.
Why do I not want to see that?
But well, there's
maybe. Well, they're holding it because it's Johnny Depp.
Yeah, that'd be hilarious if the Nutcracker was Johnny Depp.
I hope.
So this it was fascinating to me because I feel like first of all, there is some marketing money because I'm seeing billboards and like occasional trailers, but there's not a ton of Disney. Like when Disney markets a movie. You know it's coming out.
Right.
There's no, you know exactly when it's coming out. Your kids know when it's coming out. And this one, they're...
How have I not heard of this until now?
Right, right. And I feel like this was almost like some weird back burner project that got made and Disney executives didn't know it got made. Like, and then they're like, well, now we should release it. We may as well try to get some of the money back.
Who's spending all this money on pumpkin outfits?
Yeah, I didn't... I just got the budget. What is this this Nutcracker line item? What is this?
It was a rat war on the soundstage? What is going on?
So this looks like an absolute mess, this movie. And I really don't... I'd love to know the story behind on how it got made because it looks like it was just pieced together haphazardly and then released with the same amount of enthusiasm.
I feel like a lottery winner... got drunk and said, I want to make a movie. And then this is what they made.
It's really what it looks like. Yeah. I don't know if your kids are going to make you go see this. I'm sorry, but I don't know any adult, even if you love the Nutcracker story and you love Christmas and you love ballet and you love dancing rats, you're probably still going to go, I'm not going to go see this movie. No, I'd rather just go see the ballet again.
The ballet is pretty good. Yeah, they had it down a long time ago. They really figured it out.
So, and you really need four realms?
No,
I think we're good.
There's just one realm.
Yeah. And the next movie is Vox Lux. And this is another one where I was like, did they really make this movie?
Official trailer.
Yeah, Natalie Portman and Jude Law.
Greenbrook is the feel-good
regretting their choice.
I've never had fried chicken in my life.
Of course, we've got to wait for this trailer.
Oh, yeah, the trailer before the trailer.
For a movie before the movie.
Mm, that's a great idea.
Rated PG-13 this Thanksgiving.
All right, thank you, Greenbrook. Here we go.
Now, it says R. It's going to be language, some strong violence, and some drug content.
So... from the public's perspective, this has been an emotional few years for you. Can you tell us what audiences can expect from the new album?
This is a culmination of my life's work so far. I was under a lot of stress after my accident, but that's what the show is about. It's about rebirth.
Do we really need a Lady Gaga parody movie? That's immediately what I thought of when I saw this trailer.
Night.
Even down to the accent.
People have been trying to take me down for years. But I won't stay down.
Celeste, come on.
So Jude Law in a hotel room.
Everybody's
hallway.
Downstairs.
That's a comedy beat when someone falls over onto the floor.
Powerful haunting film you can't turn away.
It's a weird world we live in. and the way I've chosen to live my life.
Oh, that guy was the trailer editor.
Please don't follow me.
Because it's got all these
some people's views on things.
Festival.
Do you mind if I get a quick picture with you?
Mom, I'm worried about you. You're worried about me.
All right, Rolling Stone, you trust their opinion.
I'm scared.
Keep it simple.
Taylor's doing nothing for me, though. Jude Law is in this movie because they're saying he's in this movie, but he's not in any of the clips. It's in, what, one or two? And now we've got machine guns.
He wanted a show. I gave him a show.
I don't know. I'm and there's music by Sia.
And directed by Bradley Corbett, not Bradley Cooper. So...
So a discount Bradley
Cooper. Yeah. It's like, get me the star's porn director or his cheapest equivalent.
I want to look this up on IMDb. I'm so perplexed by that trailer because they do all these things of like, quick cuts. And then they keep putting one big name festival official selection laurel after another.
Mm-hmm. So apparently got into a bunch of festivals.
And they really liked it at those festivals.
Rolling Stone liked it.
Brady Corbett has directed, let's see what he's directed, The Childhood of a Leader and a short film.
All right. So not a huge resume, but that's okay.
He could have a vision. He could have a vision.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel like this movie, it's watching that trailer, it is either really amazing or... it's a bag of shit, and they're going to go, let's play the art house thing, because if we tell people it's this artistic masterpiece, then they'll... I've seen so many boring, useless movies, and just a festival goes, oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Everyone in that world goes, oh, tomorrow. It's amazing. Yeah. And no one wants to call it out and go, I didn't get this. This was stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this feel like this might have festival goggles all over it.
Black Swan.
Yeah. So... when I saw that this trailer too, I'm like, but it just has an undertone of like, we need to take down Lady Gaga. I'm like, really? Are you sure?
Or yeah, I don't
even get... to the point where like the costumes, like, well, just make it look like Lady Gaga's costume, but not quite that we get sued. Like that kind of like,
and is it the cult of fame where like her fans are like crazy avid supporters?
Yeah, we don't know. You couldn't even tell from the trailer. You just got one clip of fans getting crazy at a show, but what does that mean? Are they
and then why are there machine stalking guns her?
Yeah,
the
why are there machine guns? Is it a heist going on at the same time as the concert? What's going on?
I feel like they don't have the footage, so they cut together all of these festival laurels and quotes from the Rolling Stones to tell us how great it is because they don't have the footage to show us.
Right. That could be.
Right? Yeah. I mean, that's what I feel like. They're trying to trick me.
Mm-hmm. It feels that way. It feels like a musical bait and switch.
Yeah. It feels like the movie Catfish.
Yeah.
Remember you got Catfish with the right, movie Catfish? Yeah. Remember the Catfish trailer made you feel like... It's more suspenseful than Hitchcock.
Right.
And you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then it was just boring.
Right.
Or Blair Witch.
Yeah.
Which is you running around that goddamn forest. Mm-hmm. And the thing of Blair Witch,
I'll give more credit to.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was like, it was, you know, found footage was not the
That was brand new. We had never done that. But even then.
And their marketing campaign was so smart.
Right. Yeah. But they didn't have the footage. They didn't have a movie there. It was... Blair Witch, as I always said, it was like going to see Jaws and you just saw the fin and heard the music, dum bum 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 bum, and the shark never jumped up, never bit anybody. You just...
Oh, that was Open Water.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was specifically what you're describing is that movie Open Water. They had all these festival laurels and I'm like, this is a piece of shit and there's like nothing going on with the sharks. They're just trapped in the water and then at the end, they're done.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm going to have to, someone, I don't know, I'm going to go see this. Someone that I trust is going to have to tell me they saw this and it was actually way better than I thought.
Yeah. Maybe Laura House will go see it. We'll make her go see it.
All right.
So I'll ask her. Okay, on DVD and Blu-ray, The Spy Who Dumped Me. Is this the, who was in this movie?
Kate Winston, I think is
Mila, Mila Kunis and McKinnon.
Kate McKinnon. Right.
So yeah, I didn't quite see this movie, but it didn't really interest me.
I've heard it was fun.
Yeah, I've heard it was funny too. But it just, it,
I kept waiting to watch it on a plane.
Yeah, so yeah, if it shows up on a plane, I'll see it. Slender Man, this was another horror movie, studio horror movie trying to cash in on like an urban legend. Never works.
Nope.
So it didn't, you know, and it was also the kind of thing where it came out way after the teenagers were already past Slender Man. Like, we're not interested anymore. Oh, now the movie's coming out? Great. Well, we're not going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and it's going to be shitty on top of that? Fantastic. Then we're definitely not going to see it. The next movie is Teen Titans Go to the Movies. I really want to see this. My kids really want to see
this. I loved it.
I'm going to rent it as soon as it comes out.
I had so much fun at this movie. Yeah. There's so many great jokes in it. Mm-hmm. There's so many great jokes in the frame, just in the backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun. It's really well written. It's got all, it makes fun of the DC universe.
Right.
It makes fun of the Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's a blast. I mean, if you haven't seen this.
Deadpool for kids.
It is Deadpool for kids and families.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
The next movie is Mandy. This is the Nicolas Cage movie. And I'll tell you, I have heard nothing but good things. People have saying this movie is intense, brutal, and one of the best movies Nicolas Cage has done in years. So what I'm hearing, though, is like it's one of those movies that it's an acquired taste. Like, you have to like horror movies. You have to like brutal movies. You have to like all those things.
You have to like madness.
Yeah, insanity and then have, you know, Nicolas Cage, but apparently does a really good job on it. Like, because the trailer was so insane. Like, I was asking, like, because Neil saw it. He loved it. And then a couple other people I talked to, they loved it too. And I was like, well, is it like some weird supernatural horror movie? Because there's like, is it a hallucination? Is there like, are there ghosts? I couldn't tell from the trailer because the trailer was so insane. Was there monsters or what? And Neil did say it's pretty much a revenge story that's brutal and bloody. And a lot of that is just, it's all visions and hallucinations. So it's not an actual like horror ghost supernatural story. But he said it's amazing, one of his best movies. So if you know, it might be something I check out if it shows up on a streaming service.
Now, what if people tell you that Vox Lux is like Mandy? Like, it's that crazy and inventive. It's crazy in an interesting, inventive way, like people are saying about Mandy.
Right, then I'll go see it for sure. Okay. I will. I'll go. I'll trust what other people say.
Why would you do that?
Yeah. No, but if people I trust in their opinion and they're saying that, then I will go see it. So that will mean that the trailer editors had no idea what to do with the film. And they were just literally put into the computer, like, take a scene every, like, 15 minutes, and then that'll be the trailer. So it was literally, the trailer was a timestamp in the entire movie. So, okay, and the site spotlight and the fan feedback. We are still giving away the free t-shirts with every t-shirt order. The downloads are working now. You could get Lefganistan. We're not doing pay-as-you-go anymore, but we're lowering the price. It's only $4.99.
Look at that.
And Jackie Cation's This Will Make a Great Horcrux comedy special is there. Earbuds is there. The Earbuds extras. And also, we just put back up Henry Phillips is Punching the Clown because he's coming on in 2 weeks. So
it's going to be awesome,
you can
man.
Check that out.
And it's a great way
well.
To, you guys, you know, mm-hmm. you do that. You're supporting the site. You're supporting yep. independent artists.
And you're like, but I want to be part of the site, but I don't have any money. Well, we've got you covered there too. The message boards are now up and running again. Charlene, our new board moderator, is up there. She's starting threads. She's cleaning up all the old spammy posts. And it's like, it's a brand new house. Come and visit.
Come join it. Come to the
yeah.
comedy film.
And we already had a couple people come out and say, oh, this is great. I'm glad people are finally coming back after like a 2-year break.
Oh, God.
And and it's good to see. So I know it's a bit of a ghost town right now, but come on back. We'll make it a really fun community again. We're at the, and you're getting in on the ground floor. We're starting over. As of like last week. So,
there you go.
So
and thank you,
out.
Charlene, for
yes.
jumping in to be the moderator. We really
thank
appreciate
you so much.
That.
It was a heavy lift to get started
yes.
for sure. and premiering this week, Bohemian Rhapsody. I'll tell you, I'm really looking forward to this movie, but I think I need to manage my expectations because I feel like I'm ready to be disappointed if it's not great. So I'm like, you know what? Let me snap that down a little bit and let me just enjoy the film and see how it is.
I'm going in expecting this to be awesome.
Yeah.
Which I might
be even more disappointed than I will be.
I am swinging for the fucking fences, man. I either hit it out of the park or I strike out like a jackass.
And the other movie is, of course, Nutcracker and the Four Realms.
Oh, no, these four realms here all.
So,
Those accents and gowns. Yeah. Special effects.
And wind-up soldiers.
Wind-up soldiers made by computers. Yes.
So, and
go see Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, yeah. That deserves your money more.
Or watch Teen Titans Go.
Yes. Well, that is our show, Graham.
Oh, it is.
It is. It's our, it's our first comeback show. I feel like when we go away to a festival, it's like it's a big ordeal and it just feels longer. Like
it's just 2 days.
I know. It just feels like
we didn't go to China.
We've been gone for 4 weeks.
It's like, it was just 2 days. It's no big deal.
So, but Aaron looks tired.
I am tired.
We don't have to take on his exhaustion because he had to move a studio across the desert and then back. We just drove there. Yeah. We told some movie jokes.
And then we came back.
You drove home. I did some jokes. And then I watched the movie. And then I,
hit a plane.
Had snacks in the United Club Lounge at the Phoenix Airport.
Nice.
It's good snacks. Mm-hmm. A little bit of a flight delay, but we made it home. All right, everybody. Thank you.
We'll make it up in the snacks. Yes. So, And that is our show.
That's it, 440, guys. Mm-hmm. Lock it down. Drag it out. Thank you so much to everybody at the All Things Comedy who made the festival, really. So many people.
Yeah, it was great. I want to thank everybody.
Put so much work into that. And everybody at all the clubs, Stand Up Live, the Tempe Improv, that whole team of club owners like Brian and Andrew Dorfman, Mark Grossman. Matt Coleman. They're all, they're club owners that I've known for years. They just really run, we've been doing this a long time. We know the club owners that are shitheads and weasels. Yes. We've seen the clubs go out of business because everyone started doing blow. Mm. We know the clubs that don't treat their comics well. And we know the clubs where they're always honest and cool. And that's why they're still around.
Right.
So,
Matt is great. We were having some tech issues. He looked at me. He's like, "Do you need a hug?" And I was like, "Yes, I do."
I mean, there've been Ron Placone and I emailed those guys. They said, "We're trying this new progressive comedy tour." And, Matt Coleman gave us an off night at the Tempe Improv in May. Brian Dorfman gave us an off night in, Nashville in June. And his brother Andrew, who runs the Huntsville club, the Stand Up Live down in Huntsville, they gave us off nights. They're like, "Look, Graham, we can't risk a weekend because those are our big money nights, but we'll give you off nights to try this new thing." And they're supporting a cool new thing. Yeah, they're businessmen. They can't like give us Saturday night, and if we don't pack the house because that's their money night. But like, how cool is that? That so many club owners are dicks, or these guys are just upfront with you. And I really appreciate it. And the fact that they're involved in this festival is one of the reasons why it's a good festival.
Right.
I'm not naming names, but there's some other clubs in this city that,
interesting. It's a good festival.
It's a good festival. It's a good festival. ADC is a good festival.
Before we go off on a tangent.
Sure. I'll be talking about that in a different...
Political vigilante.
Somewhere else. That's going to be discussed.
But it's a really fun festival. And the thing I like about it, too, is even last year, and we got this compliment when we were starting LA Podfest. It felt like a fifth year festival. Yeah. Like it was ran so well, it was smooth, and the fans were really digging it. So it's and that takes a lot of work to get all that planning done before.
We've been to plenty of first year festivals that were clunky and unorganized,
right, exactly.
and you cut them slack. But this just felt like boom. This was just up and running. Mm-hmm. And the pop-up studio was such a cool idea last year to see them make it better and improve it.
That's great. And it was a reasonable price. What was the price for the pop-up studio, Aaron?
Free.
Free. There you go. That's a good price. How can you go wrong?
Appreciated as a performer.
Mm-hmm.
We all got paid a little bit. We got hotels. We got appreciated as a performer. Mm-hmm. It's not just like, "You should be lucky we're inviting you."
So we're looking forward to next year.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that is our show, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a bunch of stuff coming up. I'm in production on Conversations from the Abyss, It's been a while, but we have about half of them in production, in post, rather.
I just recorded one with Rick Overton.
Yeah, Graham did a fantastic one with Rick Overton. Really cool. With a political spin that stunt casting. And they're coming out really well. Dave Schmidt has been doing a fantastic job on the audio post and over at Acapella Audio. Mm. And he's got some really creepy ones, got some interesting ones. Janet Varney is so busy with all her shows right now, but still found time to record one. You know, and hers is really good.
Schmidt at Acapella is so great. You know, he came in and helped out on a couple episodes of the FNX thing because we were jammed up in post. And he's really, you know, he did earbuds, he did Afghanistan.
Yep. So if you ever have any audio needs, go to acapellaaudio.com.
Please do.
Free plug.
Free plug, Dave.
So, all right.
That's our show. Thank you, Aaron, everybody at ATC. My name's Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.